Joining us now, Mitch Harper. He covers the Cougs for KSLSports.com. Mitch, there actually is kind of a BYU angle to this as we're talking about, you know, sports media and media rights and those sorts of things that, you know, I couldn't help but notice. I don't love the Big 12's distribution, especially when it comes to college basketball. And it seems like the games that shouldn't be streaming are being streamed. And like I'm flipping over to ESPN and seeing a West Coast Conference game and BYU's playing on ESPN Plus or something. Like what's your first taste of their distribution and how accessible, you know, these teams are going to be in the Big 12?
A lot of big ESPN Plus, that's for sure. And you know, coming up in 2025, 2026, there will be more of a Fox element, so FS1, FS2, maybe some network Fox for Big 12 basketball. You know, the football distribution, I think, was solid, you know, especially late in the season, instead of being, you know, relegated to, you know, ESPN Plus or kind of an afterthought in the college football calendar. BYU was on ABC on the final weekend against Oklahoma State. But, you know, basketball, definitely there were some, there was a push for streaming. And that was, you know, the Big 12 now on ESPN Plus was, you know, devised by, you know, Bob Bowlesby. And in some regards, you know, that was a reactionary commissioner and kind of league at the time, but maybe a little bit ahead of the curve in terms of streaming. But yeah, you gotta pay to see Big 12 basketball. And that's going to be the case again this upcoming year. I'm curious to see, you know, how much more accessible it does become in the next media rights package, because ESPN and, you know, Fox are going to have 2 billion reasons to, you know, still want the Big 12 to be in the national conversation in a world where the SEC and Big 10 are going to gobble up the headlines. There's still a lot of money on the line with the Big 12, but yeah, it's becoming tougher for fans. They're, you know, being asked to spend a lot of money on tickets. They're being asked to spend money for, you know, to watch the games. And, you know, in some regards, that's where fans got to choose, you know, what do they want to invest in? Is it, you know, college sports, which still, yeah, it might be kind of a professional light, but it's still not the highest level of sport. Do they, you know, shift their dollars to NBA and the media rights there with Peacock and whatnot? And so it'll be interesting to see what kind of ripple effect it does have on the consumer in when it comes to Big 12 and BYU and Utah.
Mitch, where are you on BYU basketball and what's happened in the last week? Obviously, the huge addition with Chris Burgess moving over. Rumors about Kay Bakeda potentially following him. I know he's out looking around, but what's the state of BYU basketball after what felt like a low point when Mark Pope left?
It's in a solid place, you know, that anyone saying that, you know, suddenly they're a, you know, Big 12 title contender, I'd hesitate on that, but I do think that, you know, they're in a position to be an NCAA tournament team potentially next season. The schedule's going to be tougher, and I think that's something that not enough has been pointed out, is, you know, the non-conference is going to be tougher. You might face Purdue, you might face John Calipari, Arkansas team, and in MTE, you're going to have at Wyoming, you're going to go at Providence, it could be a preseason top 25 team. I mean, those games alone are tougher than really anything you face last year in the non-conference, and then you go up to a 20-game Big 12 schedule. But I like, you know, the pieces in the roster, and I just think the commitment you're seeing from BYU basketball, this is no longer a world where we're talking about, well, BYU spend. No, they're spending, and they're invested at a high level to go chase, you know, and being in the conversation of among the Big 12 elite. And Kevin Young's getting to operate the program that he sees fit. And, you know, as he told me like a month ago when he got introduced, you know, he's not getting many no's. And when he wants something, he's getting it. And they got a chief of staff who basically is going to be kind of like an NBA GM, where he's going to manage NIL. And so then that allows, you know, Kevin Young to, you know, be a coach and, you know, X's and O's and develop relationships with the players instead of dealing with the headaches of NIL. So I think BYU's in a really good place. You know, the jury's out on where the on-court product will be. Will it be better than last year? We'll see. But they're in a good place long-term to trench as a threat in the Big 12, and that's all you can ask for after losing Mark Pope.
Are we seeing the same sort of spending flex on the football side, Mitch?
It's a good question. I mean, I think that, you know, there was definitely a push early on when, you know, Kalani and the program moved to the Big 12, where they added additional resources with the staff. But it almost felt like it was getting more up to par, or a little bit closer to par, rather than kind of being ahead of the curve, where it feels like, you know, BYU basketball is making a push to be one or two steps ahead of everyone, at least trying to be. And, you know, I think football, you know, it's interesting because you just don't seem to have that, you know, with football, they haven't had the on-field product that has maybe inspired belief that it could be, you know, in the national race. You know, last year at stretches, you know, there were advanced metrics saying BYU's a national title contender. Obviously, it didn't happen. They lost to the Cane, for goodness sake. But football, but there are a lot more support staff. There's a bigger recruiting budget with, but there's always a desire to have more. And but I just think that now going forward, if we see a world where revenue sharing does come into play very soon, you know, is there as much of a need for all this additional staff and all these additional, you know, facilities or whatever it needs to be, probably just getting the money necessary for revenue sharing and continuing to operate at the highest stage possible that college football has to offer and be in that club, whatever that ends up being. So, you know, I think BYU's got more resources than they've put off for many years. And I think if need be, they can put together enough to continue to put BYU sports and football, most notably, at the highest stage.
Mitch, you're working on your top 100 BYU football players of all time. I know you released the top 25, or I should say the latest 25, 100 to 76. What's this project been like, and what's some of your criteria on how you rank these guys?
You know, I think, you know, BYU is going to be going into this fall their 100th football season. The 100th anniversary was a couple years ago in 2022, but due to World War II, they had a couple of years off. So this is the 100th season this fall. And, you know, I think some of the big, you know, big criteria, you know, national award winners, All-American, All-Conference guys, you know, not as based on necessarily stats. You know, if there was a, you know, kind of a close call on some players, maybe stats could give a break. But some of the best overall athletes, you know, just talents. And, you know, that was kind of some of the key criteria. And guys that just made an impact on the national landscape of college football beyond just simply BYU. And, you know, BYU's got a rich history. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, going forward into the kind of the heart of their life in the Big 12, how much they build on that history and what kind of the next chapter, you know, tells. Because, I mean, you go back to the archives of, you know, BYU football in the 80s, the 90s, even to some degree the early 2000s, you know, they were kind of a mover and a shaker on the national scale, where they were kind of feared in many regards. Still had that, you know, battle for respect in many aspects. But, you know, BYU had, you know, so much cachet. They go on the recruiting trail and they get a five-star quarterback prospect out of, you know, California, like, all the time. And, you know, just trying to compute that today, that just you can't even imagine that thought. And so it's just kind of a way to highlight the, you know, the history of the program, because I think there's so many kind of fascinating stories of BYU's history and individual personalities and talents, and putting together and kind of talking to some of these all-time greats. You know, I've talked with, you know, Ty Detmer, talked with Luke Staley, you know, Chris Hoke, many guys over the years that, you know, have made a dent that are going to be on this list. And, you know, it just they still have a lot of deep respect for, you know, kind of BYU football. So it's been a fun project, and, you know, it keeps me busy in a month where maybe it should be slower. I hesitate saying that, because I thought maybe April would be somewhat slow, and then Mark Pope goes to Kentucky. So there's always news going on in the BYU world, but it's a fun project, and I've been enjoying putting it together.
I want to ask you about one specific player on the list so far. Number 97. Now, one spot in front of the Payne train. Man, I love me some Matt Payne. Easily my favorite kicker that I've covered. One spot behind Reno Mahe at number 96. Have you gotten any feedback from Hans about his selection at number 97?
I haven't yet. I haven't. I gotta touch base with Hans, and and sit down with him for maybe even an interview for the features. But Hans deserved to be in the top 100, and he's in so many regards that defensive line that he was part of with Chris Hoke, Byron Frisch, even Satema Nolley. There was a lot of NFL players, and it kind of reflects what maybe Kalani wants in a defensive line, because that's what he knew was big physical linemen that had Tom Osborne's Nebraska recruiting those guys. I mean, Hans was a big time recruit for BYU. He had the whole West Coast and Nebraska when they were Nebraska recruiting him, and he was a really good player for BYU in the interior of that line. But I'd be curious to see what he'd have to say about being 97. And that's kind of the fun thing too, is getting a few former players chiming in about their placement on that 25, and they're like, get a little bit upset or I'm on the list. So that's been kind of fun to see, to get some text and reaction from that.
Now, I would advise you against sitting down with him personally, but not because of the ranking. Like, I think Hans would be honored to be 97 sandwiched between the Pain Train and Reno Mahe. It's the sentence. He was an all no. Let me see. Nope, that's not the one. It's a sentence. One of Olsen's career highlights was a scoop and score against San Diego State in 1999, which is fine. But you added, with his arms flailing everywhere to celebrate, and included a video. I thought that part of his feedback might not be really positive.
Yeah, that's true. And maybe I took it a little bit farther with. Because Hans is such a fun personality, and it's fun too to kind of look back. I was digging into the archives too of, with KSL and our immense archives and all the content we have. It's like his personality. It's not just like what people hear on the air is like that. That's just Hans. Like even back then, he was this like just such different guy. Even Rob Morris and Kevin Federick back then would say that's Hans is just his own world, man. And it's just pretty cool to. He was a heck of a player though. And BYU defensive lines, could really take a page from what they were in the late 90s, early 2000s, because, if they could be anywhere close to that, they'd be a pretty good defensive line in the Big 12.
Hey Mitch, am I letting the cat out of the bag? You've got a big interview today.
Yeah, no, I'm going to be talking with Kalani Sitake today and kind of doing a debrief on, Big 12 meetings and, kind of go over to the state of the football program and where things are heading, for BYU football. They're going to be starting up fall camp at the end of July. And it's kind of crazy to think it's only 2 months away from getting it going here. So, kind of with the portal in the rearview mirror, with the Big 12 coaches meetings in the rearview, kind of a check in with Kalani to see where things are at for his program as he gets ready for what's going to be an important 2024 and what they, what they look like this season, because I think it's so critical for BYU to establish the identity of what they're going to be, both defensively, offensively. I mean, everything. There wasn't many signs of, the BYU football team that you saw maybe in 2021 with the violent running game and the physical line play. Where's that going to be? Is it going to transpire this year in a 16-team Big 12 where, yes, there's not a clear-cut gold standard team, but it's going to be tough. And I think BYU's got one of the toughest conference schedules in the league this year. So they got a tall deck stacked in front of them, but always curious to get Kalani's thoughts, and should be good insight from Kalani chat with him today.
Well, just make sure you start out the interview with some really harsh, hard-hitting criticism. I hear he likes that. I mean, really get after him.
I will do.
Right at the beginning. Thank you, Mitch. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mitch.
You bet. You bet, guys. Take care.
All right, there you go. That's Mitch Harper. Covers BYU for KSLSports.com.